everybody, welcome to the second episode of Rated NA, the podcast for the website Nerd Appropriate, where we talk about all things gaming, comics, movies, music, and whatever else we feel like talking about. We have some news, some discussion pieces today, and a couple of quick reviews. So this is
Ash, Scott, what's up?
And Matt, here to talk about it. Anything you guys want to talk about starting up or no?
How you guys been?
Good. I got the Kinect sensor.
You don't say.
I do say.
Yes.
And I am now waving at my television and talking to it in very short phrases.
Matt has a question regarding nudity and the Kinect.
I don't remember it.
Oh, well, have you stood naked in front of your Kinect sensor? And we want to know if the Kinect has the ability to sense a naked penis.
Well,
he's got a long answer and a short answer.
Well, the only thing I've noticed so far is that when you stand in front of the sensor, it recognizes your hands and not necessarily... Okay, let me back up. Maybe it does recognize other parts of your body, but the only parts that it acknowledges are your hands.
Oh, okay.
So when you kind of stand in front of the camera, the picture-in-picture makes your hands glow like you're a biotic from Mass Effect, and then...
Ooh.
And then you just kind of wave your hand in front of the TV and hold it like...
So what you're saying is not a product for amputees.
No, I think it's probably very biased against...
It's geared toward multi-limbed people.
Yeah, they should really put that on the box, I think. I don't know if you can just hold something in place of the arm.
What a horrible image of a guy who buys a Kinect who lost his arm somehow and is no! Yeah. Like in front of the machine.
Well, that was kind of that was the argument with the Wii as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of like usability issues with these new motion games that are coming out as far as like not even amputees, but what if you're paraplegic or what if you're in a wheelchair? Mm-hmm. Like, can you actually use any of these things? And I think it's a good question, you know? I mean, are we segmenting out gamers? I think it's weird. I don't know.
It definitely is.
Although, in the same breath, what the Kinect does do for usability, though, is allow you to interact with your Xbox through your voice.
That is true.
And it should be able to recognize your face, like, and sign you in with your...
Right.
With
but
your
I'm saying, like,
gamer tag.
As far as Netflix and as far as, you know, ESPN and all these other things that they're adding with Kinect, now you've got voice control where somebody who maybe can't use a remote or a control can sit there and control their Xbox.
Yeah, but what if you're mute? Then what do you do?
You know what? I say fuck the mutes.
Yeah.
Poor mutes.
It's always going to make somebody mad, right?
Those poor mutes. On my end, just been working a lot. Got sick from a kid coughing on me. And I was telling you guys earlier that I took a glorious photo that I have to share with you. I woke up the other morning and I couldn't breathe very well. And I crawled to the bathroom.
I still don't want to see this.
And I leaned over the sink and I spit up this, like... For those in the audience, I can only liken it to... Let's see. A mushed up tomato.
God.
I took a photo.
I'm glad you keep putting it in front of Scott's face.
Oh, man. I took a photo of it for you. Yeah, and then I talked to my buddy Micah, and he said I should probably go get my lungs removed or something. So
Micah's halfway a doctor.
I think if you
took a cyst out and you smashed it a little bit,
it would look like that.
I think that's just.
I think
about
if you killed
like.
One of those jellyfish that are like see through in the sea, that's
it
what
does,
it would look like.
Yeah. Looks except like something from Avatar.
Except it came out of your. It came out of your mouth.
Yeah.
For me, my only piece of news is that the show you guys didn't miss last week, because they're not online yet, was due to the fact that I went to New York for a week and had a good vacation, got out of town. And as we started to talk about before, I actually missed the Engadget gathering that had what I believe was the Windows Phone 7, Google TV, I think Nokia was there. There was a bunch of random sponsors that had their products you could go play with.
Weren't they the ones that did the event that one time where they told people they were going to throw a iPhone out the window if you go to like their headquarters? Wasn't that
Engadget?
It was iPads.
Oh, they were going to.
Was it Engadget?
No, that was a wire.
It was someone that invited a bunch of people to come to their office and stand outside, and they were going to toss.
Wow. That seems ridiculous.
Like
no, that was Alex Albrecht and Remember when they did that? They threw the iPads out the window.
And there was like
indignation.
Yeah,
they thought thought like 10 people were going to show up, and then 1,000 people stood outside and like brawled to the death. Uh-huh. Essentially, yeah.
It was like at their thing at Comic-Con, they threw out these $100 headphones, and it was like it was like a fist fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And like beer poured on me, and like
wow. I mean, they're nice headphones, though.
They were nice headphones. I shivved somebody.
You know what blows my mind? That means like guys like that are in Gadget. Like they get so much of this shit. Like promo stuff that they just like iPads. I'll toss 4 of them out a window. Yeah. I got 7 of them in here. You know,
we're buried under thousands of dollars of the latest electronics. It's really a burden to us.
Yeah, it's got to be like, you know, it's got to be like burnout at some point, right? Like, does technology just not become cool at some point if you
deal with that possibility. Much of it?
I don't know. All right, well, let's we're gonna kick off some news in a minute here, and that'll be that. Thanks for listening. Actually brought us all of the news stories today, so I'm going to let him go ahead and kick them off.
Okay, the first item that I found was a big deal for me because I'm a huge Resident Evil fan, have been for many years of my life, and I'm kind of a little bit sad with the direction the franchise went into. I thought 5 was just kind of a letdown story-wise and gameplay-wise and everything else. However, news is traveling that Western developers, the people that made one of the SOCOM games, Zipper Interactive, is making a new Resident Evil game called Resident Evil Raccoon City. Now, this is awesome for me. Yes, this is awesome for me because always have I wanted to play through the destruction of Raccoon City. We get a little bit of it.
Oh, is it going to be a zombie, like that kind of zombie game?
Well, I don't know.
And Left 4 Dead?
I don't know if it's going to be... They haven't revealed anything. So hopefully it's still a Resident Evil game, but I definitely want to see new additions to how the game is played. No more tank controls. No more mixing of herbs.
Can you run and shoot at the same time?
Let's hope so. Let's hope the age has dawned where you can run and shoot at the same time. But I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinions on what you thought of Western developers working on like a sacred Capcom franchise. What do you think? Like, how do you feel about that?
Somebody just left Capcom, didn't they?
The Mega Man creator.
Mega Man creator, right? Yeah. I mean, we talked about this briefly last week, of this idea of Western RPGs versus I think it was last week, versus Japanese RPGs.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know. I think the zombie, you know, even though Resident Evil was pretty much one of the first zombie video games, right? I
mean, yeah, no, it really was.
90-something or other when that first one came out.
Yeah.
I feel like Americans have taken that genre and kind of escalated it to something else. And Resident Evil kind of was, and with the exception of Resident Evil 4, which was, you know, barely kind of a zombie game, was honestly one of the best games I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like they've done much for the series, so I don't know. I would say I'm relatively excited to see a completely different take on one of my favorite series as well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it at this point, they've muddled up the story so much.
Oh, well, yeah.
They've kind of desecrated so many of the characters and changed them around so much. At this point, it needs a fresh angle. And just to be able to see, you know, Raccoon City get destroyed, maybe from a different perspective, and playing maybe as members of the STARS member, as the STARS team, as they go into the mansion.
I just hope it's not... And I've never played any of the SOCOMs, so I have no idea. but I just hope it's not like Left 4 Dead's doing really good, like let's just do that. Yeah. Like I just hope they actually do something with the game and not let's take an existing property and put Resident Evil on top of it.
When you say SOCOM, it makes me think of
that horrible game that was out, because that's what it makes me
think. No, there was a SOCOM that was released for the PSP. It was like a tactical kind of game. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I thought of when you said SOCOM Resident Evil was like having a team of SARS members that you tactically deploy to like decapitate zombies and
SOCOM's always been, if I remember correctly, a PlayStation exclusive franchise.
Yeah.
The guys that are working on this one, they're called Zipper Interactive, and they did one of the more recent SOCOM games. They actually got fairly decently reviewed, so it's not just gonna. But I think most of the SOCOM games, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're third-person shooters.
Yeah, I think the ones on the PSP, they kind of branched out with some of the tactical, more like Rainbow Six-style games. Yeah. But I just thought it'd be funny to have a tactical game like that wasn't necessarily like military, mm-hmm. Focused, like kind of like tongue in cheek, deploy Molotov cocktail, flanking maneuver, go, that kind of thing.
I mean, to me, what I picture is you're either a fan of these or not, them going almost towards like the movie franchise of this, like, kind of all out zombie war almost, I mean, I don't know, for some reason, I just feel like because it's American. Every American take on zombies is there's a billion zombies out there, and they're all killing and tearing apart everything.
Yeah, and then there's a guy with a minigun screaming. I mean, and that is not necessarily a bad thing. I think at this point the franchise needs to be reset. They have some great characters that they that are alive that they never did anything with.
Yeah,
like Barry Burton and Rebecca and all these characters that are just kind of thrown away, and you always kind of wondered what happened to him, or at least I did. So
let me ask you a question as me being a casual fan of Resident Evil and not a fan of Capcom in general, just because I kind of feel like those games and kind of like the Japanese style in particular is to make games that are unnecessarily difficult and then also reward players for like speed bonuses. And those are two things.
But I think that's a Japanese thing. I think we're going to see that go away.
That's what I'm saying. How do you feel like about that? As they transition to an American developer, if it doesn't like have some of those.
Did you ever care about that though? Like, I never cared.
Those more like esoteric Japanese elements.
What I think a lot of people don't realize about the Resident Evil series, it was really in. I think the first one came out in '96. It was one of the first games to really have a story. That wasn't an RPG. It was more of a, sort of a shooter, more sort of a puzzle game.
Yeah.
But it actually had a story. You were trying to unravel, like, what happened to this town, how to get out, where your friends are, how they died. And it had a really great feel of just immersion in this crazy, crazy place when all this was breaking loose. And this isn't a time in the mid to late 90s where games were absolute crap. I mean, they were just garbage. I mean, I remember sitting there playing so many PS1 games and just being bored to tears instantly, mm-hmm. So, it needs to go back to its roots of storytelling, and right now the stories of those games are so disjointed and broken up.
Yeah.
They need to get back to having characters again.
Yeah. So even without some of, the more Japanese qualities of the original games, it's not really going to make a difference as long as they kind of keep a good story and maybe the puzzle elements or whatever.
The problem is we've gotten so spoiled that storytelling in games has improved exponentially since the mid 90s.
Sure.
To the point now we have phenomenal stories that are novel quality, like the Mass Effect series and Dragon Age, mm-hmm. and not just BioWare, BioWare games. They're awesome. Everything else sucks. No, but you know what I'm saying.
No, we can cite additional examples. Yeah.
So, maybe. So the next up, something near and dear to my heart is.
So the other big item that I was kind of shocked by because I didn't really know anything about it. DirecTV has, as of November 1st, dropped the G4 network from its lineup, and it was over financial squabbling.
You always hear about that kind of stuff happening. You see the commercials on, on cable. It's a DirecTV commercial. Bright House is going to drop ESPN if if nothing happens, and of course everything is sorted out at the last minute. But this actually happened.
I am the only DirecTV person here in the room, Yeah. I can tell you this is... This, honestly, it pisses me off, and I'll say why for a few reasons. But the difference, I would say... Like, when I was in New York, and this we would never know this in the South, because I think it's called Cable Town. Doesn't mm-hmm. exist down here. Cable Town was having a huge fight with Fox and the Fox channels. And Fox wanted more money. Cable Town didn't want to give it to him. It was a back and forth. But it was pretty open that, like, you could tell Fox wanted more. Cable Town didn't want to give them more. And eventually, they actually got shut off for a week and then fixed it and then came back on. So they were out for a week. I think, and I heard somebody talk about one of the things that they think Fox was banking on was that the Yankees would end up in the World Series. And then they didn't.
Oh.
They lost.
Whoops.
And when they lost, I think all of New York was like, I'm done with Fox. And just kind of, because Fox carries the World Series, for those of you that aren't into sports. And
lowest rated World Series ever. Yeah. Holla.
Yeah. What'd you say? The regular TV, or no, was it Ryan telling me that a regular season football game beat the World Series in ratings?
I'm pretty sure a preseason football game beat something else, like, more significant in its own sport.
That's a whole other topic of baseball and where it is right now. But anyways, that's what happens usually, which is this back and forth of, we want more mm-hmm. money, we're not going to give it to you. And then they come to a term of, like, okay, we'll agree. This is what it sounds like happened differently, and we obviously aren't on the inside, but DirecTV was pretty forthcoming with what was going on, and so was G4. And essentially G4 was just like, hey, thanks for having us. You know, we just want to continue the same deal we've had this entire time, mm-hmm. and we want to stay on your network. And DirecTV said, basically, well, we don't feel like your ratings are worth it. We're canceling you to open up for better programming. So it wasn't like, oh, yeah, we'll work a deal out with you. It was just, yeah, we've decided we don't want you anymore, and mm-hmm. chopped them off. So they're gone. Like, and I don't think they're coming back unless Comcast pulls something amazing, because mm-hmm. Comcast owns G4 TV.
Mm-hmm.
What pisses me off about it is this. G4, DirecTV sells you packages of channels. So you've got, like, your basic, your super basic, your premium, and then, like, your ultra premium, and, like, your movie channels premium.
Mm-hmm.
G4 is listed in the premium, which puts it a solid $40 above everything else that you could buy there.
So you paid extra $40 just for one channel.
I paid $40 for G4, essentially. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the list of channels that you got in the premium over not premium was, like, ESPN 7 through 12, MTV 14, like, it was all these, like, extra channels that you're like, I don't give two craps about any of that.
Yeah.
The
Ocho.
Yeah. but G4 was one of those, like, solid core programming channels. I was like, oh, awesome. Yeah, I want the premium package because I want G4. So the fact that I paid that, and then DirecTV just basically was like, we changed our mind. Sorry, buddy. And, like, canceled it.
Yeah.
And if I was inside of a contract, which I'm actually out of, I had a Twitter conversation with DirecTV. I don't know if you guys ended up seeing that. But
no.
I wrote them and asked them what the fuck they were doing and why. Yeah. And DirecTV wrote me back and said, we're in talks. You can follow it here, and sent me a link. And I wrote them again after the decision came down that they weren't going to carry them. Wrote him again, and I was like, you know, my contract's up. Thanks for making my decision easier. And, I mean, I'm done with them. This is...
Yeah.
Not that I care only about one channel. I was already kind of on the fence somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I'm paying extra for a single channel, and then they just knock it off matter.
Yeah, I was one of those people that called DirecTV that day.
Uh-huh.
Because all the people were posting on Twitter, you know, help us out, call. So I called, I want to say, on the 1st, when the big decision was going down. And I talked to an actual live person, which was strange. They're like, what's your customer number? I'm like, I'm not a customer. I just want to complain. And I guess they had gotten thousands and thousands of calls, but they directed me to a website that, you know,
didn't really say anything. Yeah.
So.
I mean, you know, good. I'm glad they got thousands of calls, but it apparently wasn't enough to change their mind.
Yeah.
And they decided the ratings were too low and didn't want to deal with them anymore.
Well, here's the thing from my perspective, and this is might be like a pro tip for... you know, channel providers, is that consumers don't really care what the problem is. You know, like, if...
Because you dealt with it with Viacom and Bright House.
Sure. But, like...
But that got solved.
Yeah, what it boils down to is that whether the channel pulls itself from the provider or the provider puts up a barrier from the channel being displayed, at the end of the day, we don't really care. We just want to see the channel. And if you take it away from us, we're just going to leave either way. So,
and this is, I think this is a much larger discussion that we can go into, hint, hint, possibly later in a discussion.
Yeah.
But you and I have talked about before, TV's changing. TV's going the way of music, going the way of movies. People are starting to want options. They're realizing they can have options. And I honestly think cable and satellite providers are scared shitless because they don't know what to do to solve this problem.
Right. We should talk more about this later.
Possibly.
All right.
All right. The last piece of news that I gathered was... sorry, it's about BioWare. Dragon Age is actually coming out with a casual Facebook
game. Can't see it right
now,
but he's got a heart on.
I do. It's an erection. I have a one-inch erection.
Did any of you guys play... Dragon Age Journeys, the flash-based Dragon Age game?
You know, I did.
3 seconds of it.
3 seconds? I probably played about 10 hours of it.
Really?
Yeah, I think I beat it a couple of times. Just
that was its own Flash thing, right? It was just standalone.
Yeah,
Flash,
they had their own website, and it was a Flash game that you could log into with your EA account. And, you know, if you were savvy enough to link your EA account to your, you know, your Xbox gamer tag or whatever, you could complete tasks within the game. And pretty much the quote-unquote achievements that you would unlock in the Flash-based game would unlock weapons and items once Dragon Age actually came out for your console. So it was kind of cool in the game itself. Like, even if there wasn't anything to unlock, it was still fun. And I think maybe, like, front to back, if you try to do everything, it took, I don't know, like 4 or 5 hours to complete.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was exciting.
This one's going to be doing the same thing.
But it's in Facebook, though, now, right?
It is. It's in Facebook, and it... you're going to be able to unlock items.
Can
armor.
I buy sheep?
I don't know. You can probably spend real money on fake items, though. Yeah. That's what I'm assuming the whole point is. But I just wondered what your opinions were on large gaming publishers going the casual route, making games for things like Facebook and for mobile devices.
there's something that immediately comes to mind, and that was... there was a Facebook game for, or some kind of application for the new Assassin's Creed Brotherhood game that's coming out.
Yeah.
I signed up for it, never looked at it, and then one day I decided to navigate to that page on my Facebook page, and it wouldn't load. And so after about 10 seconds of staring at the page, I was like, well, this is pointless, and then I closed it.
Huh.
And that was the end of it. So,
I mean...
make your stuff work.
Here's the thing. Publishers... as we've learned over and over again by their cutthroatness with developers and things like that nature, and things of that nature, are in it to make money. So somehow, this obviously is going to be some kind of profit generator for them. I can only assume that what they think is going to happen is that the 500, and that is the real number, 500 million Facebook users out there are all going to be like, oh, whoa, a cool new game, and not know that it has anything to do with an Xbox game whatsoever, start playing it, and that's going to generate more sales of their actual game that they make money on for Xbox. Because I don't understand how else this is good for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think it's cool that developers are providing content to games that you would otherwise not get, like avenues of Scott's at work and he's bored, so he can go onto Facebook and play Dragon Age for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Not that he would ever do that, you know. Not that he did that for the first time he played Dragon Age Online.
Not at all.
But
dedicated.
But you know, to me, it's just this has got to lead to money somewhere. They're not going to. There's no publisher in the world that's like, I'm for the love of games, just going to put things out for people. Like, they're in it for money. You know, I mean, that's all there is to it. So I don't know. Yay, extra content.
Yeah.
I don't use Facebook that often, so really, to me, it's like, oh, I'm not going to touch that either.
My thing with mobile gaming and Facebook gaming is I'll play anything if it's fun. Yeah, I'd rather play it on my nice TV, sitting on my couch.
Sure.
But if a game is fun, I'll play it on any, you know, system, site, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me.
But with these, like, micro games, aren't you just kind of like, well, yeah, that's cute. You know, like, moving on.
I guess that's what I'm saying. I think they're trying to capture this, like, I don't know why they would, but I feel like they're trying to capture, like, you know, the stay-at-home mom who's, like, got a billion...
Speaking of which.
Got a billion, I don't know what that means.
The farm bill.
Oh, God, that's a whole other story.
That's terrible.
Yeah. To side note real quick, what he's talking about is there's a woman who lives not that far, about 3 hours from us in Jacksonville, who got tired of her child screaming while she was trying to play Farmville, and then shook the baby to death. Actually, shook the baby, stopped, had a cigarette break, shook the baby to death after that.
Yes.
And I think the article is also quick to point out that the creators of Farmville keep a psychologist on hand to make their games more addicting.
Really?
So it's kind of like...
Yeah, but I mean, come on. Like, that... You're already fucking nuts if you shake a baby to death.
No, you're
you're not just killing babies because Farmville's not working the way you want it to.
There's no excuse, and you're absolutely crazy for doing it, but at the same time, like...
I've never gotten frustrated with Halo and then strangled my dog to death.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, that company in particular is... Their sole intention is to make their game addicting with things like skill trees and, like, unlockable items, you know, things like that.
Yeah, things we all get addicted to.
So what we're saying is Facebook games are bad, and they shouldn't make this Dragon Age game.
Yes, down with Dragon Age for Facebook. It's going to make me shake my puppies.
The whole thing is just hokey, you know, it's like, oh, it's Facebook, yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. It's that, like you know, I develop websites for a living, right? And this is a very common theme. It's like, I build a website for somebody, and then a month later, like, something blows up. So, like, a guy wants a website that does, like, news stories, because, man, you can get ad hits, you get news stories, blah, blah. And then Facebook gets 500 million users, and he comes to me, he's like, we need to make our site social. And it's like, it's just this chasing a tail attitude of, like, where do we go to get this crowd that
Facebook's like, you know, the freaking prom king right now. And like,
and they probably will be for a while. I mean, you can't have that kind of user base and then fail immediately, but... Yeah. You know, I don't know. Is it any better than the Flash thing? I don't think so. I actually think it lessens it being on Facebook.
Absolutely, yeah. Cheapens the value of the game, I think.
I don't know. But is that because we're just nerds and we want like nerdy things to be our own and not let anybody else into them?
I'm going to play the hell out of it. If I can unlock a sword in Dragon Age 2, I'm going to play that motherfucker until my hands
until
bleed.
Until you shake your puppies.
Yes. I already have a free unlockable weapon.
Oh, Lord.
Which I'm excited
pre-order,
about.
Huh?
No, it's actually from going to Comic-Con.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah.
The Comic-Con.
You should have that, too. I think I gave you a thing that should have that on there, right?
Yeah, they should have emailed you.
I don't think so.
Oh, maybe not.
It's a staff.
All right, well, that's the news, and we're going to come back with a discussion in our open thread segment having to do with the big lumbering giant that is Microsoft.
That was excellent.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that.
Hello, we're here for the open thread.
We're here for the open thread.
Can we just derail this conversation real quick? What were you guys for Halloween?
I was baseball furies from Warriors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go second.
Well, I went to, like, a hipster party, so I just...
You sure did. You went to the hippie part of town.
Yeah, I just, I decided to be something ironic, so my fiancé and I went to the costume store and just bought little kids' costumes.
Nice.
And I was a knight.
Nice.
And she was a princess.
Nice.
But I, like, everything was too small, you know, because it was, like, made for a child. It was classic.
I am slightly chunkier than the average man. I'm husky, if you will. And I went as out-of-work Batman. And the concept of the costume was... This is the grossest picture I ever created. I look 10 times grosser in that picture than I think I did in real life.
Oh, right, I haven't seen this yet.
It's on Haley's profile. So maybe we'll post this up on the website.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
So, essentially, I bought a little kid's Batman utility belt. I bought a Batman t-shirt with the logo, large logo on it. I bought, actually, Darth Vader gloves, but they were black and leather looking, so they worked. A cape and a Batman mask. And then I bought gray sweatpants. Actually, what you can't see, because my gut's hanging over them, are the Batman Underoos I also had on.
Nice.
And then I bought sweatpants, gray sweatpants, and actually stained them with soy sauce that night. I poured it on my hands and then wiped it on my sweatpants. And then I wore sandals. And I hung a sign out, made out of cardboard around my neck that said, "We'll fight crime for food." And the theory in my head was that Batman hasn't really done anything for a couple years.
And times are tough. We're in a
recession.
Times
are tough. We're in a recession. He lost half of his fortune. So he had to, like, sell off most of his costume, but he didn't want to stop being Batman, so he just went and got, like, a Batman t-shirt so I could wear it, and he's, like, just piecing together this half-assed costume, and he's, like, standing out on the highway, like, "Look, man, I'll kill your supervillains for food."
Did he talk in a low, grumbly voice?
I actually did do that a few times at the party. I just would walk, like, somebody would say something, like, But yeah, that was my costume. It was pretty gross and awesome. Grossly awesome.
Were you grumbling like Batman or grumbling like a homeless person?
I think it's the same, actually. The combination is too much difference.
It is very similar.
The funniest part about the whole thing was that we got beer on the way to the party that night, and Melissa forgot her ID, so she couldn't go in with me. So we went to the liquor store, and I walked in the liquor store in sandals, stained sweatpants, and a Batman t-shirt, bought a case of beer completely by myself on Halloween night, and then walked out back to the car, and Melissa informed me that I looked like the saddest nerd ever created on Halloween night completely by myself, buying a case of beer so that I could just take it home and play Mass Effect and sit by myself all night. So it was pretty fun, but I had a good time.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that was the Halloween costumes.
Fantastic.
Good deal.
What are we talking about today?
Not Halloween, jackass. So for our open thread today, I thought this was relevant because Microsoft, the big lumbering giant that they are, has weirdly been surging in the market. Now, you'll read conflicting arguments all over the place that either A, they're moving away from consumer base, or B, that they are awesome. Like, you see it, I've seen it multiple times where there's like two articles posted next to each other. One is Microsoft is tanking, and the other one's Microsoft's doing incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening is this. What a lot of people don't know about Microsoft is a huge chunk of their business comes from enterprise. So, you know, you and me don't actually make up of a lot of Microsoft's income. It's a lot of, like, I work for a university, and the entire university is Microsoft, like, mm-hmm. bought and paid, you know. But what's happening now, and I think why they're getting this surge of positive all of a sudden, is things like the Kinect, where the technology behind the Kinect, I mean, feelings one way or the other, is just mind-blowing. I mean, they really, honestly did take motion control and push it into another area. Windows 7, which was a phenomenal OS, honestly, like, especially I think following Vista, which was such a turd. I think that
yeah.
Windows 7 just blew everyone away. You've got Zune, which is such a weird argument to make because it is not a successful thing. Zune has not done well. Like, Zune isn't beating the iPod. It's barely competing with it. But anyone who has used a Zune, especially a Zune HD or the Zune software...
I think it's amazing.
It is amazing, and it is so much better than an iPod. And it's just like, you just have to get it in front of people, and that's what Microsoft really failed at doing. And now you've got Windows Phone 7, which, I mean, I've never seen a piece of technology that Microsoft does get this much buzz leading up to it coming out. I mean, everyone's writing about it like a serious product.
They're bringing sexy back, I think.
They're having this crazy resurgence of them being important again after a long amount of time of, with the exception of the Xbox, and even the first Xbox, everybody forgets, was a, no one knew whether that was going to beat PlayStation, and it kind of didn't really. The PS2 was a monster in the gaming industry versus the Xbox. The Xbox just kind of, I think through sheer force of will, hung on until they could get the 360 out, which has been a gigantic success.
Here in the States, at least.
Because the PS3 still destroys it in Japan. Mm. I don't know about Europe. I don't know which one's winning in Europe.
Don't either.
But what I wanted to kind of just kick the conversation off is, are we seeing a resurgence? Is this Microsoft becoming relevant again? Or is this, they're going to somehow stumble and fail at marketing their stuff once again, and then it's just going to fall to the wayside, and Windows Phone 7 will be the, you know, kin or whatever?
I think it's all in the design. I mean, I think,
well,
aesthetically, their stuff has just gotten so much better.
I was gonna say, I do web design, web development. Scott's in like the usability field. Ash is kind of the one that's not a like a tech design geek.
Yeah.
So I really want to know your opinion of this stuff, because I mean, I read about it constantly and I'm super interested in it, but I know you aren't necessarily in it on a daily basis. So what
no,
do you think?
I'm not. I'm totally a layman when it comes because I like to lay. I'm a layman.
He likes to lay man.
I like to lay man. No, I you know, from a complete outsider's perspective when it comes to this kind of stuff, you can definitely see a massive change in how sleek, how quick, and how easy Microsoft stuff is to use. Because it used to be, all of it was very un-user-friendly. And right. even the latest update to Xbox Live on November 1st, awesome. It is leaps and bounds above what it was, you know, two iterations ago, I guess.
Oh, yeah, the blades.
Yeah. blades. Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, I use Windows 7. I use, you know, I have a 360, obviously. I don't have a fancy Windows phone. It's not out yet, is it?
No. Next week.
I don't have a Zune. You guys are the only people that I know that have Zunes. But
I hear
it's awesome.
It's awesome.
I hear it's awesome. No, but I definitely noticed a big change, and I don't know where it came from. It's all of a sudden like they hired a bunch of people that got fired from Apple. And then they stole all their tech, and now they're competing with Apple's market.
I think maybe what is happening is that they're trying to be, like, I use the word like sexy, like they're trying to become sexier in the consumer space with like the way that they style these products. Because I mean, I don't really think that Microsoft ever like went away. They just may not have been newsworthy.
Microsoft stumbled for a while. I mean, the Google and Apple should not be as big as they are if Microsoft didn't screw up enough to let them into that marketplace.
Sure, I mean, the company still makes like billions of dollars
a
year.
No, of course, but as we said, a lot of that's enterprise. They lasted off of enterprise for a little while.
Right, but I'm saying there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying like maybe they had overlooked the everyday consumer and just assumed that they would try to get by with like you know Windows Mobile 6 or something like that, which was not user friendly or whatever.
At
so
all. God
but,
awful.
But now they're kind of creating like this ecosystem, you know, and not until very recently did the Zune and the Xbox even really like play well together. I mean, you could
recently, not until yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could get like you could watch movies. I think in the update from like last,
but you had to plug your Zune in, right? Didn't you?
No, I mean like the Zune marketplace for movies had been around for a while, but now it supports your Zune Pass.
Yeah,
so you can, you know, if you have that subscription, you can listen to music on your Xbox. It's kind of like a Last.fm experience where you hear the things that you want to hear. And you know, there's going to be integration with the phone. I think a lot of these products were around, and now they're actually putting them all together, which is going to make, like, if you live in that ecosystem, it's going to be even better. Just like if you were an Apple person before that, you know.
Yeah, of course. I think to your point, like basically what I see happened was Microsoft got lazy. They were making billions upon billions. I mean, just like fistfuls of cash.
Yeah.
And what people forget a lot of times, too, with the exception of the 360 and pre-Zune, Microsoft didn't do hardware at all. They don't make hardware. They make software. They literally make an OS, and then they supply programs for that OS. And that's all they sell. So a lot of this, like perception, which I think is awesome because you said it, of Apple making, Apple makes these sexy products. It was because Apple makes hardware, and it makes good hardware. It makes awesome-looking hardware. But OS 9 was a hunk of junk. I mean, OS 10 only came around about, I think, 7 or 8 years ago. OS 10 came out, and that's when Apple all of a sudden became relevant in the software world that Microsoft existed. Previous to that, Microsoft owned the internet, too. I mean, Internet Explorer was the only browser you went online with. They owned, you know, the MSN network, and they owned some other things that were big properties on the internet. And then Google came around and just made something easy. And people were like, oh, you know, well, you can just Google it. Look at Google, blah, blah, blah. And Microsoft missed that step. And that's what I was saying is they got this kind of like lackadaisical, we're gigantic, it doesn't matter, what are you going to do to come after us? And then, you know, fast forward 8 years, and a gigantic, I mean, they don't own the internet at all anymore. They're, the percentage of Microsoft ruling the internet is gone. Like, Hotmail's been completely eclipsed. Internet Explorer, for the first time, I think in the longest time, is now not the number one browser. Or it doesn't own the majority of the market, that's what it is. I think all the other ones combined have surpassed it by far. You've got, you know, hardware that Mac and, like, the iPod puts out, and it just blows. I mean, it's just foresight, I think, on the part of Apple and Google that Microsoft didn't have. So what I'm wondering is, like, to me, this doesn't look like force. I mean, this doesn't look like catch-up to me. This looks like they're actually looking into the future, you know? I mean, there was a really interesting comment that I want to bring up and let you guys talk about. Somebody said that the difference between the Zune and the Windows Phone 7 and Apple and Google is that the design for the Zune and the design for Windows Phone 7 doesn't try to pretend that it's not on a flat screen surface. And when you look at an iPhone, everything's in 3D. Everything's like as if it's rounded and shiny and it's coming off the screen at you. And Windows just kind of went like, nope, it's a screen and it's flat. And when you think about it, you're like, well, that would look stupid. And then you use it and you're like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like, it looks awesome, you know? And it plays really well in your hand. And I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that, that kind of idea of this design move that they're doing.
I mean, I think the old design for Windows and for Internet Explorer, which is my only exposure to their software design, it used to be very, I want to say, industrialized. Like, mm-hmm. It was not even built for, like, an average casual consumer. It was built, like you said, for, like, an industrial workplace. Yeah. Like, we're going to install this OS into 500 computers in mm-hmm. your school, and everybody's going to use it. That's the end. Like, there were no bells and whistles. There was nothing to make it look good or function well. It was all just, like, bare bones, this is what you need to use. But I think all of it is just the evolution of software in general. Like, you know, this is, I don't want to get too far off topic,
no,
but we're getting to the point where, you know, I just read an article today that was saying, in 5 years' time, between 2 and 5 years' time, you're going to be able to play a game with the exact same clarity of Gears of War 2 on a handheld device with absolute clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way that, you know, microprocessors and chips and everything are functioning. And it's moving so quickly that everything, or like our preconception about what phones are and what OSs are, Microsoft, Apple, all that's going to change so quick in the next 5 years. It's going to be
well, really,
if you showed me this iPad,
we use an iPad for our timers and stuff.
Yeah, if you showed me that 5 years ago, I would have thought you were Marty McFly from the fucking
future. Sure. Well, I mean, people forget that, you know, I remember having the conversation not even 6 years ago of being like, man, internet on the phone is like the worst experience ever. I don't know why anyone would want to do that. And I am on the internet on my phone effing constantly now. Like, it's ridiculous how much I use my phone. There are times where if my connection's shitty enough on my computer, I'll get my phone out and do it faster. You know, like, I was at my brother's house and he has crappy wireless and I was like trying to order a pizza online, and it literally took me so long that I pulled out my phone, was like, Domino's.com, blink, 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 order, and done, you know, on my phone, which is insane to think about.
Yeah, it is.
But, Scott, did you?
Well, I was thinking about what you were saying about the phones and what they're doing with the Windows phone, and what stood out there was the sort of the transition of moving from, you know, icons. Like, there's icons on the Android operating system and on the iOS, and that's still kind of like a holdover from the desktop days where you want to go into something and you have to push a button and you go into a program
right.
and you click on the icon. So we're still doing some of the same stuff that we were doing on the desktop, and now, like, Microsoft is kind of taking the next step and saying, well, like, you don't have to go into a program to do everything. Now we just have these hubs where
we have things,
we have things where it's like
collections.
Like collections of things. It's like, now if you want to look at pictures, you don't have to go separately into Facebook and separately into
it's
like
really
a Flickr
weird
app.
Way of thinking about how you access data. Like, they've really taken this idea of, well, no, you're not going to Facebook. You're looking at your friends, you know,
right.
And then you go and you click your friends and you're like, there's all your friends and everything's integrated.
But it's like Twitter and Facebook and like other sources. And it's just like, what are my friends doing? Here's like an aggregate look of things that my friends are doing right now.
They're also doing something really crazy. And when I showed it to my Melissa, my wife, on the Zune HD, it is pretty mind-blowing because I've never really seen it before. They do this thing where they break... Essentially, there's a grid, but it's like an off-centered grid. So things kind of hang on the screen, on like one side of the screen. And there'll be some space on the other side. And then there's words that continue into the part you can't see anymore. And what they're treating it as is this is one big window, and then you're sliding through things. And if there's more information to the right or to the left, there's a visual cue that there's actually more information to the right or the left.
It's kind of like you have like a Ouija board, you know, and you can only see through the glass window of the...
Yes, but you see pieces of like things around it, so you know there's like another letter there, you know, yeah. But so like, it's weird, like you'll be on your friends thing and it'll say friends, and then to the right you'll see like pick. And then when you zoom it over, it'll say pictures and all your stuff. Like, it's a weird way of doing visual cues that things are around you. I don't know. I mean, it makes me... And I'm weird because I have a Google phone, which I love. I have a MacBook that I use for work that I love. But I have an Xbox that I absolutely adore. And I actually like Windows 7 a whole lot. When I was freelancing, that's what I used. I'm excited, and I don't think I could ever say literally in my entire life that I've been excited about a Windows product.
Yeah, and I think I would even say that I use an Android phone as well, but I'm not excited about it.
Google doesn't make you excited, except for Google TV got me a little excited, but Google doesn't make you excited about things. Google makes you realize the utility of stuff. You're like, oh, wow, this is actually just useful. Like, oh, wow, yeah, they're doing things for me that just makes sense, you know? Like, it works well. You know, like, Google TV, like, every review I've read, which I'm dying to get my hands on, every review I've read is like, it's not like, this thing, I'm so excited about this. It's just like, it works really well, and I can tell this is the future of TV.
It's like, hey, it's internet on my TV.
Yeah, like, this is where everything's going, so I know this is what it's going to be, but, you know... It's right now, it's like not flashy. It's just kind of like it does what it does, and we're happy with it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because now today, we can stand in front of our TV and go, Xbox, I want to watch ESPN.
That is fucking nuts. I'm sorry, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, voice activation. If anybody remembers back in the old PC days, there's a program called Dragon Dictate.
And it turned into Dragon Speak, didn't it? Or Dictate.
It might have, but it was such a piece of fucking crap.
You had to train it for hours.
Oh, it was ridiculous. It was so bad. And then, you know, there have been games over the years that have used some sort of voice activation. There was recently a Tom Clancy game.
But it was so hacky, it barely worked.
It did, and if Kinect works as well as I hear it's working, that's... Very, very... Because, I mean, for strategy games and things, if you can be like, Alpha Team, go.
Yeah.
And not have them go like, what? And just, like, run in circles. That's awesome.
I have a funny story to tell you from when I was a QA tester at EA. We worked on a PlayStation 2 version of NASCAR. And I think it was the year that they introduced team driving with voice commands. So, you know, like... For those of you that don't know a lot about NASCAR, sometimes a car owner will own multiple cars. And although, like, race car drivers are competing against one another, you race as a team, and maybe you guys help each other draft to the front, and then you shoot it out between the two of you. So, anyways.
Talladega Nights is my only...
Yeah. It's not important, but what was important was that you could say things like, you know, like, HUD on, or HUD off, or, you know, draft with me, or whatever. And I remember testing the game... And I would go, HUD on, and nothing would happen. And then I would go, HUD on, and it would work. So then I started talking to it that way. I would go, hey, buddy, draft with me. And they'd be like, right on, buddy, we're right on your tail.
So it would only work if you had a horrible country accent.
Yeah, so if you use the country accent in the NASCAR game, then it worked. But the point of the story is that I hooked up my Kinect today. And with no training whatsoever, after the Kinect does its own calibration, and then after it's hooked up, I just said, Xbox, Kinect Hub, and then it took me Kinect Hub, and then I said, Xbox, ESPN, and then the ESPN application came up. And I did no training with my own voice specifically to get that to work.
I also saw demos, like live demos, not the demo stuff they've done at conferences, which I always half believe. But I've seen, and I actually believe even less now that I know how the Kinect kind of works. And the rooms, I'm like, there's no way. Like, standing in a gigantic auditorium, the thing was like, oh yeah, no problem, that's that guy right there. Like, I think they were doing some video fakery. But I've seen the hand pause and move thing work, and it is Minority Report, and it is effing crazy. Like, to see it work, like, literally put your hand up, pause, and then take it and go like that, and have the thing move back with your hand, and then pull it away, and, like, play, I think, is, like, shoving forward with your hand, and having it just go.
I haven't,
like,
gotten that far yet.
It's just, like, I'm watching it going, like, how, like, where did they come up with this shit? Like, I mean, not where, I mean, nowhere, but, like, I don't, it just, it's, it makes me happy to see useful technology coming out as opposed to, you know, and I'm sorry, a friggin' dildo with a color ball on the top that you wave around like it's like the next thing that's gonna happen. It's just a Wii, like it didn't do anything.
I'll quickly mention that for those of you that may or may not be listening, Microsoft has a very significant usability and game research department, and if you ever have time, go look up, you know, maybe some of the work that they did on, I think it was Halo 2 or Halo 3. There was even an article in Wired about it, but they do...
I read the Wired article.
They do a lot of very technical, experimental research on the way levels are designed, the way, like, certain things should be paced in video games, and I can only imagine that they used, like, that same kind of, like, HRI usability expertise to design, like, the gestural components and the way that you communicate with the Kinect.
I also would say that from all the articles I read, what I heard was that the Wii came out in, what, 07? I think, or 08? Early 08? No, it was Holiday 07.
I think it could have been as early as 2006, like Holiday 2006.
Well, whatever.
It could be, yeah.
As soon as the Wii came out, I heard that the Xbox, the president of Xbox just went in and was like, we need to top that. I don't know what. We need to top it. Like, put money in, let's figure out how to do it, and let's do it now. And I don't think the PlayStation moved on it as quickly, and I think we're seeing that come to bear now. Like, we're seeing a very solid product in the Kinect come out with tech that is just beyond versus a product that came out to shaky problems, like, you know, non-recognition, calibration issues left and right, and basically was a redux of what had already been done.
What makes that really great, and I think you kind of touched upon it, is the fact that we have competition in this market.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, now we can only hope that the next great thing will come from Nintendo, and then...
And it probably will. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, the point came out when the Wii came out that Nintendo has revolutionized the controller every single time it's been revolutionized.
Yeah, it's kind of like a really exciting time for video games.
With the exception of Kinect. I guess this is the first time somebody's done something with a controller that Nintendo didn't push.
I think so, yeah.
That's crazy.
Go Microsoft.
All right.
We'll see how it does nudity. That's my...
I'm telling you, they've got filters on that.
Xbox. Already... Nudity time.
It's just like a frowny face. Yeah. On the screen.
Man, the possibilities. The thrusting motion.
I'm sorry, we can't detect your nudity.
What if it's just like, that is relatively pathetic. Game review.
I guess we're going to start out this week with my review of New Vegas, which is Fallout New Vegas, which was developed by Obsidian and not by Bethesda, but it was developed by some of the guys in Obsidian that actually worked on the original Fallout games, which of course are very different from Fallout 3. So I was super, super apprehensive of this game. I didn't want to like it. I'm one of those people that really hate when companies give their amazing products to other studios and then say, hey, let's just make another version of the same game because we know the last one did really well and all you have to do is kind of like tweak this one out and it's going to do well
too. Oh man, who made KOTOR 2?
Obsidian.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Yeah, well, exactly. But here's my deal. The changes they made in New Vegas, and I'll get a little bit into the plotline and stuff later, but the changes they made fixed a lot of the issues I have. Number one, there's a lot more weapons in this one, okay? And a lot of people aren't really putting emphasis on that in their reviews, there's probably double the guns, I would go as far to say.
Huh.
And for me, that was a big deal, because I remember in Fallout 3, I literally used a hunting rifle through the whole fucking game.
Did you really?
The whole game, all I had was a hunting rifle.
Just as an aside, I think the three of us all played Fallout 3, and all three of our experiences were completely different.
Yeah, yeah. Really?
I played, just real quick, I played the game on PC,
yeah.
Right? And you know how you could use the D-pad to assign, like,
yeah.
items all around? I probably had, let's see, if that's eight, I probably had six weapons, and then stims and grenades. So I carried, throughout the whole game, I carried six different weapons,
yeah.
and I used them all.
Okay.
I did not use the D-pad.
Yeah?
Ever.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
So in this one, I can just off the top of my head say that there's probably four or five different sniper rifles.
Wow, that's impressive.
And then, of course, my guy was all gun, so I didn't really delve too much into heavy weapons and things like that. Another massive addition to the game are companions, and there were companions in Fallout 3, but they were mortal, meaning that, of course, if they died in the game, they were out of the story, and that was it.
And they could die.
And they could die very easily. And forces you to reload and have constant stress. New Vegas, your companions are immortal as long as you're playing on the non-hardcore mode, which I'll talk about in a minute. So companions in this game are awesome. One of them is voiced by Danny Trejo, who plays a ghoul, who you can run around with Danny Trejo the whole time. So you have Machete.
Machete
as a companion, who has a very interesting backstory. He plays Raul the Ghoul. You have Veronica, who is played by Felicia Day, who, of course, I ran around with the whole time because I was pretending I was running around with Felicia Day. She has a great story where she is in the Brotherhood of Steel, but she's not really too happy with it, and you have to figure out how to deal with this whole situation. But anyway, the companions are great. They have Mass Effect 2 style loyalty quests, where if you unlock their loyalty quests by serving time with them, they get new perks which you will inherit. For instance, Veronica. If you run around with Veronica long enough, she has a workbench that she can help you build items on the fly no matter where you are.
So you don't, like, as opposed to stopping at a workbench.
Yeah, you have to stop at a workbench. You can just, like, have her lean over, like, a table and you build stuff on her.
That was a Freudian slip.
Yeah. Sorry, Felicia Day. Anyway, story-wise, this is another thing that New Vegas does great. It does something called factions, and Fallout 3 did this, but it wasn't very apparent what faction you were really working with or who you were pissing off or what was going on. There's definitely a giant overarching story and a lot of different factions vying for power, and you can really ally with any of these factions as you go along. Like, by the end of New Vegas, I had pissed off a whole lot of people, and I had made allies with a whole lot of people I probably shouldn't have made allies with, but the way it works out, it plays off so well in the end. Basically, it's like almost, I am not to give anything away, but there's almost like another Mass Effect 2 sort of suicide mission, and all the decisions you make along the course of the game pay off in the end, meaning everybody you've encountered, everything you've done kind of culminates in this one final act, which is really good.
I don't think your decision, like, on the whole, your decisions that you made throughout most of Fallout 3 didn't really have a lot of impact on what happens at the end of the game.
No, it didn't.
And just like a few key things
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I thought, as a history nerd, I thought was really cool was, you know, the main arguably the main villain in the game is this guy Caesar. And Caesar is basically this book nerd, this historian who's just a middle-aged man who is fascinated with Roman history. And after the apocalypse, he starts to really study Roman history and realizes that Rome did it best. And he allies all these gangs together and starts to march on the west, basically with all of these, and his gang is called Caesar's Legion. And they all dress up like Romans, and they crucify people, and they're fucking terrible. And if you really want to, you can be like his right-hand man. So it's a really neat, and then you have the New California Republic, who are like the cops of New Vegas and want to, like, restore order and try and bring back, you know, an old style of government. So a lot of the old factions are there, new factions, and you can kind of, you know, play both sides for a while. And I don't want to get too much into the whole Vegas aspect of it because it's, you know, I don't want to spoil anything. But it's well done. It really is.
All right, so let me ask you. When I finished Fallout 3, yeah. I think I had probably logged, and this is including all of the DLC, I probably logged close to 90 hours throughout my save games. Like, how does this compare? Have you finished the game? Like,
I finished the game, I want to say, 3 days ago.
Okay. Obviously, there's going to be expansions, most likely.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I put in about 80 hours.
Yep.
80 hours. And it's bigger than Fallout 3 geographically. And it has actually 10 more levels. So the level cap is 30, not 20. Mm. So it's a much larger game. And the argument with that is, and you know, you heard this, they talk about it on feedback, they talk about it in a lot of other places, you're in the desert most of the fucking time.
Right.
So the beauty of, you know, seeing DC all blown up, it isn't there. I mean, there are definitely urban, destroyed urban areas, but it's not, doesn't have the same impact that it did in Fallout
3. I could certainly do without the metro system of Fallout 3.
There's no more tunnels, any of that crap.
That's terrific.
That drove me insane. But fast travel works the same. I feel like I forged better relationships with the NPCs and with the companions than I did in Fallout 3. I felt like there were more people that I gave a shit about.
Yeah. And I gotta tell you, I never took my dog with me in Fallout 3 because I felt bad about having the dog potentially die.
Yeah, I never had a companion in Fallout 3.
Yeah.
At all.
But that's
I played the entire game without a companion.
So that's what's great about it, is that everyone...
I actually think was shocked when I heard that you could have companions. Mm-hmm. I was like, really? How do you get those? Yeah. And like, never got one.
They were hard to get.
All three of us had completely...
The mutant, the super mutant or whatever that you had... that was just kind of your buddy and would just show up randomly and kill things for you.
Mm. I don't think I ever saw him.
I had that.
He's near the end of the game.
The end of the game, he would just like pop in and like kill like 100 people, and he's like, "Ah, I'm out of here," and like take off again. But he wasn't like, that wasn't a companion. That was just like a buddy, right?
Was he like the mysterious stranger? Because that's who I rode with for most of the game. Like, he probably saved my life.
I don't remember what that
there was. There was a in it. Fallout 3.
He's back.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he has a female companion called Lady Luck.
In Fallout 3, you could take a perk called Mysterious Stranger. So when you went into the... What is that mode?
Vats.
When you go into Vats, like, by like a certain percentage chance, like as you were firing out of Vats, a guy with like a trench coat and a revolver and like a duster hat would show up and just blow away. Like, yeah. one-shot kill everybody in the game.
Mysterious Stranger was
so
awesome.
So are you, in our short time left, are you going to mention any of the...
The game-breaking bugs. if anybody listening to this or in this room has seen me on live for the past 3 weeks since the game came out, you'll see that I am constantly going off and online. That is me rebooting my Xbox probably 3 times every 2 hours.
Wow.
The game freezes up fucking constantly. And this is after I put it on my hard drive. I have a newer Xbox. It has nothing to do with my system. My system is brand spanking new.
Well, this is not isolated to just you alone, right?
These bugs are widespread.
Okay, crazy shit. I'll tell 2 crazy shit bugs.
Okay.
Crazy shit bug number 1 is I pre-ordered the game, so I got a whole shitload of nice, fun in-game stuff. I got, like, a canteen that never runs out of water, which is great. I got a suit of armor that's awesome for the first 5 levels of the game. And I get a badass, unique in the game, 10 millimeter weathered pistol, okay? And I used it constantly. Finally, I get to a point where you can upgrade your guns in this game, too. You can put scopes on them and laser sights and silencers.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
And you can tweak them all out. You can have up to, like, 2 or 3 different. So I have, like, a silenced laser-sighted sniper rifle. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put a laser sight on my pre-ordered gun. I'm going to make it better. I put it on. The thing is, all of a sudden, my character is glowing red. And, like, surrounding him is a big red exclamation point. Like, you just broke your shit. Like, I took a picture of it. Hold on. Because I couldn't believe that it was happening. So, yeah. So, essentially, that was the thing that made me the angriest, was the game-breaking red exclamation point. After that... Let's see, check that bad boy out.
What?
Yeah, and me being a dumbass, I forgot about it and sheathed my gun and then saved it. So my gun's perma-broken. It still fires, but it's just like fires this red glow.
So anytime you pull it out, it makes your game look like a hipster album cover?
Yes, absolutely. A giant exclamation point surrounds my character. So the other game-breaking bug that I saw that was pretty... Actually, this one was humorous. There's a point in the game, and it's not really a big spoiler, but you have the option of interrogating one of Caesar's legion. So you take all your guns off, you go in an interrogation room, and you talk to him, and if your conversation skills are high enough, you can, like, talk him down. Otherwise, you can beat the crap out of him and get him to reveal information, which was a neat little side story. So I'm starting to hit him, and he falls down, and when he gets back up, his arms are, like, 50 feet long, and they're giant, like, demonic bat wings. And my wife, like, covers her eyes and goes, "What is happening? That's so scary!" And I'm like, "I don't fucking know what's happening." And the worst thing is I ended up killing him on accident. I beat him to death. And then he dies. The bat wings just, like, stayed and, like, broke out of the building. Like, it just shot out of the building with these horrible... And I was just like, what is this all about? So, yeah. People get stuck in the geometry. The companions will break. Things will fucking happen.
But even with the bugs...
I probably give it... If I had to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it, like, probably an 8.5.
Even though we don't do that stupid shit.
Yeah, we don't do that. But if I had to, I would give it, like, yeah, like a solid B.
Yeah. We don't do letters either.
We don't? I give it a...
Hey, did you regret buying the game?
Is it nerd appropriate?
Yeah, is it nerd appropriate?
I believe it is nerd appropriate.
All right.
It's definitely nerd appropriate.
So, Scott, what did you play out of your myriad of games that you actually played? What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. So, let's talk about Force Unleashed 2. Let me do my 10...
Scott is one of 10 people I know that beat Force Unleashed 1 and then played the DLC, too, right?
Yeah,
Not 10 people I know. 10 people I've heard of in existence.
The DLC for the original Force Unleashed was... I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
I got the new edition with the extra levels, and those were pretty good, too.
Sorry, I don't know what he put up on his screen.
There's a different... A lot of side trackery going on in here, but... let me give you my 10-second review of the Force Unleashed 2. All
right.
And it would be this. Hey, did you guys like Force Unleashed 1?
It was okay.
Well, then you're going to feel the same way about the second one. No, seriously. Okay, here's what's changed.
But the commercials were so good.
So I think maybe the most concise way to explain it is that they probably fixed the things that a lot of people hated the most about the first one. And then they made the story... Like, the game is short. Like, I honestly finished the game in about 2 days. But the story and the cutscenes, it's kind of like you take all of the fun, emotional parts of the first one and you just compress it all into sort of like a shorter experience, but you get more of that satisfaction, like, a little bit faster than maybe what you got it in the first game.
Hmm.
So, in the second game, the premise is that Darth Vader has taken your character to Kamino, and he's like, whatever's happened to you, like, you don't know what actually happened to the main character from the first game, but what they're doing with him in the second game is that they're cloning him, and the idea is that Darth Vader continuously, like, brings these clones up, and he tries to convince the clone to join him, and I guess what you're led to believe is that the problem is that every time he tries to clone, I think it's like Starkiller is the character's name.
Yeah.
Every time he tries to clone Starkiller, he still retains memories from the original Starkiller. So he retains the memories of, you know,
the girl he loves.
The girl he loves and forming the, you know, the Rebel Alliance and all that stuff. So I guess what you're led to believe is that every time Darth Vader has to destroy the clone, start over with a new one, and try to convince him, you know, that...
Let me guess. It's all bullshit, and the real Starkiller's alive the whole time. You're not a clone.
Well, I don't want to speak to it one way or another, because I don't really want to ruin anything.
Ruin it!
No!
Spoiler alert! You're not a fucking clone! Surprise!
I'll say this now.
None of us have played it, though. Ash is pure guessing.
I'm just guessing. But I mean, they're like... I just remember them talking about it, and they're like, but there's some twists and turns, and it's like, well, what's going to be the big surprise? You are or you aren't.
Well, okay, let me tell you this, then. Whatever you made, I didn't really... I tried to avoid anything press-wise, like, yeah, before the game came out. And whatever they may have said about it, the story that is contained just within this game is excellent.
Really?
And it's fun, and there's, like, a lot of emotion in the way... I guess that I could best make a comparison is if you remember in episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, probably one of the few very genuine moments in the movie was when Anakin has his legs chopped off and he's catching on fire and Obi-Wan's kind of like screaming at him and he kind of screams back at him and he's like, I hate you! Like, like that is kind of like the level of emotion that occurs. Like
I had that same conversation with my parents when I was like 14 and I wanted to go over to Mark's house.
I think everyone's had this conversation with their parents before, but that kind of like pure like hatred is kind of like that seething hatred is kind of what Starkiller feels for Darth Vader like throughout this whole game, and I think the trailers kind of speak to that.
I mean, I won't lie. I love the universe. I love the cutscenes in the first game, and I love aspects of the first game. But in the first game, the whole, like, I have never been more pissed at a game in the past 10 years than trying to direct Star Destroyer.
Pull it out of the sky!
Holy crap. I was like, this is, like, it felt like an Atari game for a second.
Okay, so here's what I'll say. Like, let's talk about the actual gameplay for a second. What they made better is that you start the game off with all of your abilities. Well, actually, most of your abilities.
You're already a badass. I love games that start you off as
like
a badass.
Minus like maybe two abilities, just for purposes of like teaching you how to play. If you've never played the game before, you already have all of your combos. You already have all of your moves, so you don't have to like put points into a combo that you either should have had or you're never going to use because you had been playing the game a certain way the whole time, anyways. Pretty much your upgrade tree is like, I want to make my lightsaber attacks stronger, I want to make my force lightning stronger, but you can still do everything right at the beginning of the game.
Okay.
So that's what was fixed. Maybe what is more of the same is the boss battles. And there's not as many of those like boss battles that take like 30 minutes to complete where like you're just kind of like chipping away at a health bar that fills the entire screen.
Yeah, and memorizing a pattern.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that still occurs to a certain extent. But they do... The game and the story do a little bit more to make those battles less tedious. I think, on the whole, they're actually shorter than the battles in the first game, even though you're still kind of doing the pattern thing where you're chipping away at the health bar. But you'll fight these boss battles now where the environments change as you go through the boss battles. So it's not just like you're staring at the boss, he's doing one thing, and then all of a sudden he switches to pattern number two, and then pattern number three. It's kind of like once you get to a certain, once you take off a certain amount of life, the whole dynamic changes, and you're doing a different kind of boss battle. Hmm. And then there aren't as many of those types of battles in the game.
Hmm. Huh, interesting.
Go ahead.
I guess, the only thing that I can add to it is that once you complete the story, there's like maybe a series of 10 challenge modes in the game where it's like, kill as many enemies as you can.
A little bit of extended play.
Yeah, it's like extended play, and I really feel like the only reason that is in there is because maybe the campaign is so short and they felt like they had to add something else.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
So, I mean, unfortunately, the campaign is really short. You know, it's kind of like, it's going to be more of a rent for most people than a buy. And I'm sure there's going to be more content.
We don't do that either.
Oh, no. No rent versus buy.
Is it appropriate for nerds?
Is it nerd appropriate? Yeah, it's Star Wars. But to be honest with you, I think...
Is it Star Wars nerd appropriate? Or is it nerd appropriate?
You know, what I was thinking as I was playing the game was, if this didn't have anything to do with Star Wars, would this be a good game? And I'm really on the fence about whether or not it would be. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But for me, the game was really enjoyable, and I had a lot of fun, and I thought the story was really fun, too.
All right.
Good deal. I ain't buying it.
I don't know if I want to call this an open thread. We have our first ever TV discussion today, and we're going to call it Boob Tube. And that's going to be the sound effect for it. So, first up in our TV discussion, the reason we're doing a TV discussion is because around this time of year, every year, it is sink or float for TV shows that get launched. A lot of times it's new shows, but what's sparking this discussion is that there's a show actually in season two that got yanked early, and that show is Caprica.
I think the way that sci-fi does some weird stuff with their season like arrangements.
Point two.
No,
version
yeah.
Point two.
Yeah,
Caprica.
I think it's actually still technically the first season of Caprica, but it's already been like, you know, they take like this hiatus and then they have more episodes and they still call it season
That's
one.
What they did with Battlestar.
Yeah, same thing. But it's already been canceled, and I don't know. I don't know where this discussion is going to go for everybody else, but I'm really going to kind of like take up the flag for.
I blame Eric Stoltz.
Do you really?
Because of his failure in Back to the Future.
Yeah. Actually, he's not too bad in Caprica, but
I'm just kidding.
I guess the soapbox I'll stand on is for science fiction television in general, and I guess my major beef, especially with Caprica, is that if a science fiction show can't survive on the sci-fi channel, like, where are you going to be able to watch sci-fi programming? You know what I mean? So let's quickly run down the list of shows that have gotten maybe canceled too soon or abruptly ended or weren't even given a chance. So we're talking Firefly, Dollhouse got two seasons, Life on Mars barely got one season, Virtuality got a pilot, which was turned into a movie, Defying Gravity got canceled halfway through a season, Caprica got canceled halfway through its first season, Sarah Connor...
Two seasons.
Yeah, two seasons, and they had to wrap that one up. Like, if you saw the last episode of Terminator, Sarah Connor...
It was, like, getting kicked in the balls.
Yeah, it's like they pretty much kicked you in the balls because they had to tie up the storyline in one episode.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, I've already named nine.
I just want to say, Scott just did that from memory, and that is relatively impressive.
Yeah.
How angry you are about this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's...
He has no paper in front of him whatsoever.
Straight off your head.
That's, honestly, like, that's why I watch TV, is for science fiction. And, you know, like, when you look at Sci-Fi Network and, you know, the thing that gets the highest ratings are shows about, like, hunting fake ghosts and and wrestling.
Well, No. The things that get the highest ratings are procedural dramas.
Oh, well, now we're talking about normal television.
Yeah.
Anything that deviates from, like...
Oh, you mean on sci-fi, yeah.
Anything that deviates from, like, solving crime and catching bad guys is, like, not profitable for normal television.
Here's the problem. I think science fiction costs a lot to make, no matter how you cut it. And if it doesn't cost a lot to make, it has a much better chance of surviving. But if you have grade A writers, talent, production, and all that, it's going to be an expensive show because it's going to have CG and it's going to have all sorts of costuming and things like that. So automatically, it costs a lot more to make it, and it costs a lot more, you know, basically it has to get better ratings than another show on the network. It doesn't need that stuff. So that's why, you know, shows like Firefly, which if it would have cost, you know, half of what it did, it would have lasted. But
it's, I guess it's just mind-boggling, because I think what we're down to now is, I think, like, as far as sci-fi goes, you've got
Fringe.
Well, I mean, Sci-Fi Channel, you've got Sanctuary and Stargate, and I hear Stargate's not doing well. I don't watch it.
Yeah,
but I hear it's not doing well. And then you've got Fringe, and I feel like Fringe is kind of like that final frontier of broadcast science fiction. Maybe Fringe and V when it comes back.
Yeah,
I don't think V's gonna make it.
V has like more. Apparently, it must have more mainstream appeal for it to still be on TV.
I don't think its numbers were ever really that good. I think they're just trying to. I think they're giving it a second shot.
Like if they had to choose between V and Flash Forward, they chose V.
Yeah, I don't think it was like killing it in the ratings. I think they were just like, well, we'll see if we can. I also think V is based off of a pre-existing property, and they think that maybe it'll catch on if they give it another season
remake.
But there, you know, there's very little left on that frontier. I mean, I don't know. Like,
you count The Event
as sci-fi?
Yeah,
I mean, in a way, I do.
It's got aliens.
It's, yeah.
I did not want to watch The Event at all.
I put it in my Lost bucket.
I threw it, well, I didn't watch Lost. Spoiler alert, I never watched Lost.
Whoa. Send your emails to matt@nerdappropriate.com.
I'm not a huge fan of these kind of shows, but...
Like, long story arc?
I just don't give a shit. Like, if you... Like 6 years... I have to invest 6 years of my effing life to watch a TV show.
See,
like,
I prefer
that's
that,
insane.
Though.
Why? Like...
Well, I mean, I prefer more than one episode.
I think here's the problem that I have with it. Sure, more than one episode. Yeah. I totally agree. But when you're arcing 6 seasons... 3 of those seasons are going to be trash and complete throwaway episodes. I don't care what you Lost fuckers say. There were bad shows on that season that were just, like, nonsensical
sure.
and had nothing to do with anything that they ever talked about again later in the series.
Great. Just real quickly, what I will say is that I feel like Abrams has gotten better with Fringe and Undercovers of doing this thing where...
Undercovers just got canceled.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, there you go. There's another one. I was watching that show,
That's
too.
That's because they're black.
Yeah.
Oh. Should I not make that joke? I'm sorry.
No, I mean...
It could be. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, like...
We voted all the black senators out, so maybe they didn't want black TV shows either.
Honestly, that wouldn't surprise me, because when I saw the show, I was like, this is a great show. I bet you it's not going to have a lot of appeal, even though it's J.J. Abrams, but... I think
J.J. Abrams, honestly, though, here's the thing with J.J. Abrams. I think he is a great idea man. I didn't watch all of Alias. I need to watch Alias. That's actually a show I really do want to watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
But it seems like he has fantastic ideas. It's just that either he has so many of them that he can't do the execution of all of them, or he doesn't have the stamina to execute them all. Because what happens is he comes up with this awesome concept, he hands it to somebody, and then I'm just like, what the hell happened to that damn show?
Do you think there's too many hands in the cookie jar?
Yeah, it's
like,
totally.
He goes to the network and he's like, I've got this awesome idea, and then they go... Well, what if there was a chick with big knockers? And he's like, that's not at all what I said.
I have a feeling that... No, I'm not going to say it, because it's probably totally not factual. But, fuck it. like, I rewatched Cloverfield the other day, I was telling you, and loved it again. Like, I absolutely loved that movie. And I liked it when I saw it in theaters. I wasn't sure how I was going to like it on a second watching, and loved it. I have this feeling that I don't think he wanted to ever... show the monster like they did at the end.
Sure.
I don't think he ever planned on it. Because the way it was advertised and the way the whole movie plays out until that point, it's like very like why did we just see it full on growl into a camera? Like it's weirdly completely out of place all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that someone like him probably didn't want that, but that the producers and the studio was like, no, everybody's gonna want to see the monster.
Come as if they did the focus group testing and everything.
Yeah, like people are mad they didn't see the monster, so let's put the monster in at the end.
And he was probably like, you know, people are probably gonna be mad that they see the monster, but they're gonna be disappointed when they see the monster.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the monster needs to look like an old lady vagina.
Yeah, and we're getting off topic, but I think J.J. Abrams is one of those guys that he comes up with brilliant shows, and then they kind of just are like. With the exception of Fringe, which, I mean, it seems to be holding steam, I don't know.
Well, the point I was going to make is that they were doing, like, double arcs. There would be, like, a one-show story arc, and then a multiple-show arc.
Well, the event, and what I was going to say with the event is I actually did start watching it through my DVD queue, or my DVR queue, and actually I'm enjoying it, but I just feel like if they're setting up to be Lost, if that's what they're trying to do, is like, oh, well, we're going to be a six-year show that ends on this, you know... Oh my god, they're dead, or whatever. I don't know. Like, if that's the show it's trying to set up to be, I'm not in it. Because it's like, I just don't... They can't sustain this story for that long. It is way too long. Like, 6 years of a TV show, which is, what, 18 episodes a season, or 20 episodes a season?
All so, different for each of the seasons.
120 hours of a story, which is nuts. Nothing is that long. Books aren't that long. Movies aren't that long. Like,
I think some Vietnamese soap operas are like 120
that's
hours
That's insane, though. Like, that's just a crazy amount of time to try to sustain a single story.
No, I agree.
You know?
I agree.
But we were talking about cancellations.
Yeah. Cancellations.
Open thread. Boob tube.
Well, I mean, now that I know that Undercovers got canceled, it's like my question is like for cables, like what are you doing? Like
but it's not cable. I mean, these shows.
Well, whoever it is, I mean,
you know, they dunk a chunk of change to get these shows off the ground between marketing and production costs. I mean, these things are in the tens of millions of dollars for like 4 episodes. Like, it's not like $30 million for this whole season. It's like $30 million, and you can do your first 3 episodes, and then we'll see what happens after.
Oh, if you want to back up a couple of. Years, I heard for those of you, have you guys ever seen Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
That show
was amazing, tremendously great.
And no, probably it cost good. An arm and a leg.
I heard that that show cost $3 million per episode to make.
Sure.
But it was
mind- that's actually not even that crazy. I
but mean, it was there's... mind-blowingly excellent.
Scott and I were talking at lunch one day. We were hanging out, and we were talking about this and TV. And what we were saying is, like, you know, how can it change? Like, what? Because these are such investments, you know, to look good, to be good shows, to be invested in and get the talent you need for writing. Like, how do we as consumers have that voice then? Like, you know, he made the point, like, I'm sure if sci-fi was like, all right, well, everybody pre-order this season for $20 and we'll make it. If we make a certain amount of money, we'll make the show. But it's like, well, then what are you going to get refunded if they don't make that amount? Like, how would that work? You know, like, yeah. How can you prove to a studio, like, there's enough of us here to fund that show? We would love to see Caprica season 3, you know, or finish season 2.
Yeah.
And you also brought up the good point, though, is that, like, if everybody that wanted to see Caprica invested $20 in the show, and then at the end of the drive or whatever, they had, you know, let's say they had $10 million, then that would be the operating budget. For this, right. For the next season.
That, I mean, but that's, you know? that's such a gigantic paradigm shift that sure. Will not happen. I mean,
no, it won't.
That can't
private
happen.
Investors and yeah, it would be awesome if it could work. I mean, the coolest thing that I saw to save a show that worked was Chuck's campaign. Chuck's campaign, they said, hey, like, look, Subway is one of our biggest investors. The biggest thing you can do is everyone go out, eat a whole shitload of Subway. And drop a little thing in the basket that says, hey, I ate this Subway sandwich for Chuck. And Subway's revenue went up so much when they did that it was enough for Subway to basically give them enough money to start the next season. And it saved the show, and it was phenomenal. And I remember being at Comic-Con and seeing that cast, and the cast was so incredibly thankful to everyone in that room because they knew that all of us had gone to Subway and eaten a shitload of Subway.
That's where like what I was talking about is this like micro funding of TV, because I wasn't saying private investors. I meant literally like 2 million people want to watch Caprica. Well, 2 million people throw $20 in a hat. You've got $40 million for a season. Like, you know, not really, because there's a lot more costs and things that go into
sure.
it, but that was what I was kind of talking about. It's the same kind of idea, just in a weird kind of shift of how it works. But, like, you know, I think the problem from that to kind of what you're talking about with some of these shows that get canceled, like Undercovers and some of these shows that get started, is that those shows aren't funded through advertising. They're funded literally through the pocket of the studio. The studio goes, NBC goes, all right, we'll do Undercovers. Here's $30 million. Go make your first 4 episodes. And they go, okay, and that includes marketing and everything else. And then they market it and they push it. And then they get advertisers on board for this show that's blowing up and taking off. And if in 3 shows they've still only got, and it can still be an incredible amount of viewers, if that show's only got 7 million viewers, NBC's likely going to axe it because they don't think that's going to get them enough ad revenue over the next year or two to fund that show, to make their money back and pay for it overall.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from my perspective is, like, okay, if you cancel Undercovers, I'm not going to start watching NCIS. I'm not going to start watching Law and Order.
Right.
So if you drive me away from TV, I'm not going to replace it with something else. I'll just stop watching TV, and then I won't be, there will be no eyeballs on
your advertising. So what do you guys think about, I'm actually about to cancel cable, literally, partly because of G4, and also because I'm moving and I don't care to have Bright House. And I'm going to give it a shot. I'm giving it a wholehearted shot of my Netflix, Hulu, you know, Roku, name your other weird named product thing there. But I also happily buy things, music included. I don't download music illegally. If I like an album, I'll go on Amazon and buy it, or I'll go into the store and buy the record. If I like TV, I will go buy those episodes. Like, one of the things I'm actually looking forward to now that I'm not going to have a glut of cable facing me is buying the Mad Men seasons, because I've never watched the show and I want to watch it. It's something that I'm really interested in. What do you guys think of this Google TV, Hulu kind of movement towards no network? Or not no network, but no cable.
I think
cable.
In terms of like you're basically saying you will buy the rights to a show for like $1 an episode. That seems to be the going rate.
A little more than that, but yeah, it's like 2 to 3.
Yeah, and to me, if you have a season that's, you know, 20 to 24 episodes, that's too expensive. Like, Because right now...
Is it though? Because I think if you added up how much you pay for cable in a yearly basis versus what you would pay for the shows you actually watch...
That's the argument. How does it even out? And like, and then there's shows that will never or won't be doing that for ages. Like, you know, shows, for instance, on G4 and things like that that don't have full G4 run episodes.
Will never have, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It is a good argument, but... I have to see how it plays out, you know.
What do you think of this? Because I've always thought this would be amazing. I would totally do this if, you know, hey, Dish Network, if you can offer this, I'd do this in a second. What if they just said, hey, pick your channels. Pick whatever channels you want. You're going to pay per channel, and then whatever channels you get, you know, that's you'll pay X amount of dollars. You know, and each channel maybe sits in a different price range.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me ask you this. What if
ESPN has a high going rate because it's a massive channel that generates tons of revenue, and G4 has a lower going rate because it's a smaller channel that doesn't generate that much revenue. And then I can a la carte, instead of a la carting shows, then I'm a la carting channels and say, like, oh, well, I watch, you know, G4, I watch ESPN, I watch this and that, put those in a basket and then pay for that.
I would be inclined to think that maybe some of those channels get on those providers as a package deal.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
So, like, if you don't take, like,
I mean,
you know, DIY, you won't get Food Network or something.
But it obviously,
you know,
failed because we're talking about this because of... Well, no, we're not, actually. We're talking about this because of Caprica, but we talked previously about G4 getting canceled. G4 is part of Comcast. That's a massive network of TV shows.
Yeah, it's kind
channels.
Of mind-boggling, yeah.
And Comcast apparently just was like, all right, you don't want to carry G4, that's fine, and didn't fight any harder. I don't know. I have no idea how that works. But
yeah, I don't either.
But if that's the case, then why did we lose G4? Because the other channels that Comcast carries are big.
I think it's very cocky of these organizations to think that if you take one type of television away from us, that we're going to just watch another.
Do you think that's what they think, though? I just think that they look at the bottom line and like, well, I'm not doing this.
I don't know what they think. I mean, I don't know if they just want to air like a straight week of primetime Law and Order TV shows, because I guess that's what the mass...
Dude, I mean, that's what the mass is, but I don't think they're making this decision based on, like, fuck Scott, he can't watch Undercover,
so he
can watch this stuff. I think they're going, like, we're not making any money on this show, we're not gonna make any money on this show, and regardless of the 7 million people that are watching it, there's 20 million that aren't, so we've got to move on and do something else.
Yeah, I guess, you know, just... Not that the TV has to be made for me, but my response is just to turn off the TV. So, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, for them, you know, like, making $0 is better than losing money, but, you know, like, I don't... It's like, what do you want? You drive me away from TV, I'll read books, you know, I'll play more video games, so...
Will you, though?
Yeah. And I do. I watch less TV now than I did a year ago.
Yeah, same here.
And the thing that you brought up that you reminded me of when you're talking about Mad Men is that, you know, when these shows come out and, you know, they compel you to watch them and then they cancel them after half a season, it's like, okay, TV, you burned me for the last time. Now I'm just going to only watch shows that I know have completed a run. So I'm going to go back and watch Battlestar.
The problem with that is, though, if Mad Men wasn't on AMC raking in tons of awards and lots of money, they wouldn't be on Amazon for me to buy and watch.
Sure.
So I'm aware of that weird paradox of...
It's like that chicken and the egg kind
of thing. Yeah, like I get to go back and watch this awesome show because it actually did well enough to be awesome and make money. You know, but not every awesome show does that. You know, Firefly is an amazing show. I went back and watched season one, but it sucks. I'm never going to see season 2 through 14 because they're never going to happen. You know, like... But then there's weird cases of... And I'll bring up one gigantic one. Family Guy, which got canceled twice on Fox, and the DVD sales were so gigantic for it that they brought it back on, and now it runs sustainably and is one of the largest cartoons, period. You know, like, it rivals Simpsons and South Park as being the largest cartoon on TV, essentially.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. I mean, I guess maybe.
So I guess the public does speak at the end of the day, but...
Yeah, I mean, there have been countless times where the public's been able to save shows and change the fate of shows. You know, the Chuck example, they did it with Buffy a long time ago. You know, there's definitely... Your voice can be heard. It's just a question of, can it be heard loud enough to actually make that difference, you know?
It's like, how do you appease, like, maybe us being a smaller set of all television consumers, like, you know, us that like these kind of like quirky, nerdy shows, you know?
I think you support them, you know? I mean, like, there's that new online show that they're running on Sci-Fi called Reese, and I actually, it's the first, like, steampunk show that they're pretty much ever showing ever on any form of TV or TV channel. And I'm excited to watch it, and I'm gonna support it and try to watch it, because I feel like it's interesting. They're doing something online, and they're probably microfunding it. It's probably a very small budget, and it looks interesting. The story looks interesting, and the aesthetic is cool. And I think the only thing you can do is support it, you know, and hope that your support is joined by other support, and that it's enough to keep a show going.
So everybody go out and buy Caprica on Blu-ray when it comes out at some point in the future.
If that happens, you never know. They might finish it off. They might come back and do it.
Well, they're already working on their next spinoff. Unfortunately, yeah, they're doing a spinoff of the first Cylon War, so it's going to be a much more action-packed, less cerebral adventure, which is good.
Yeah,
I liked all the explosions in Galactica, so sorry, Scott.
Yeah, I like them both, and I think, I mean, that's the problem, but, you know, like I said, at the beginning of this talk, I rattled off a bunch of shows that I invested at least some amount of time in, and pretty much got burned under every circumstance, so as far as I'm concerned, you know, like, you know, fool me once, you know, can't fool the fooler or whatever, so.
Or pity the fool?
Yeah, I pity the fool.
All right, so watch TV or don't. What do we don't give a fuck? All right, so that is officially the second episode of Rated NA, the podcast for nerdappropriate.com. We want to thank anyone who actually probably will listen to this show, because we are working on music. We have a real website. Things are actually moving forward now.
Yeah.
So this one will see light of day, hopefully very soon. Yeah, so thanks. This is Matt.
And Scott.
Scott.
And that guy.
And that guy. Thanks for listening.
Saying goodbye.